And our next guest was the voice of Parks Racing for 33 years. Early in December, he announced his retirement at the end of the year, and he was nice enough to give us some time this morning on the Equine Forum. Of course, it is Keith Jones. Hello! Keith Jones joins us this morning. Keith, thanks for some time. Congratulations on a great career.
Anthony, thank you. Appreciate you having me on, and thanks for the kind words. Thanks.
There was nothing better as a gambler than hearing the hello when you had the hello horse at 40 to 1.
People ask me plenty of times what was the hello, and when did a horse get a hello, and I let them know that there was a cutoff point. You had to be 20 to 1 or better to get a hello. So that's what it was. You had to be 20 to 1 or better, or you didn't get a hello.
That's fantastic. I did not know that there was a border. But that's about right. If you find the 20 to 1 shot, I think you deserve some kind of recognition. 33 years. Did it feel like that when you wrapped things up last week?
Well, it was, how about 34? Give me one more year there. It was 34 years complete.
34, wow.
And, I don't think I can say it felt like that. I guess I enjoyed what I did so much. It wasn't a grind or any of that kind of stuff, even though I was at a circuit where we raced pretty much all year round. I didn't have breaks in between meets, that kind of thing. I pretty much was at it the whole time. We did back off on the racing schedule later on in my career. At the beginning, I was doing 5 and 6 day weeks, but that didn't, go all the way to the end. But no, it didn't. I can't say it felt like that at all. No.
I guess that's, when I was thinking back about things, and you and I, when we set this interview up Thursday, you probably don't remember this because I'm sure it's happened 1,000 times. My dad brought me up to the booth. It was either 89 or 90. As a kid, and my dad always had horses at Parks and Garden
yep.
State and Atlantic City and Monmouth, so I was harassing Larry Letterman all the time and Tom and Dave over at the Meadowlands. We talk about the soundtrack. After Durkin and Marshall Cassidy, I probably heard your voice more than anybody else. And I think a lot of East Coast horse players and fans and horsemen and women could probably say the same thing. I mean, you were a constant, like you said. And I think the thing about your career is you've seen the evolution of this game probably better than anyone from the 5 and 6 day week at a place where the purses and weren't always the biggest. But from that 5 and 6 day week through the casino money and the purses exploding and the racing kind of, talking about the breaks, talk about that, how it started out just, you're working literally every day because we all know there's no day off. Even if you have a day off, it's not a day off, to right. Where it's gotten to now down there.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Anthony, because in the course of since I announced my retirement, I had some people send me some old memorabilia, and a couple of those things were really old programs, right after I got started when it was back at Philadelphia Park in the late 80s. And you look at the program, and I'm sure you remember what those old programs looked like, those thin
sure.
little things that basically just had the jockey and the trainer, and there was no PPs in there, any of that other kind of stuff. But the thing that really stood out to me was, oh my gosh, look at the purse money they're running for. It was next to nothing. And compared to what we see today, as you mentioned, with the slot machine, the slot money that gets kicked into our purse money in Pennsylvania, it's just been a huge boom to the people that have had a chance to keep their stables here and run regularly in the state of Pennsylvania. Of course, we have the great breeders bonus too for the Pennsylvania breds. But when you look back at those purses, it was just astounding how small they were.
It was funny. New Year's Eve in 89, my dad ran my favorite horse he ever trained. He had a horse named Please the Palate. I want to say the pot was $6,600. And, of course, you're supposed to send your 12-year-old son to Aqueduct on New Year's Day to put a pick six in for you. My dad hit the pick six here at Aqueduct, and it paid $16,000. I was 12 years old, and I walked around with that ticket all day. And the only thing that couldn't get out of my head was, I didn't know how pleased the pilot had done. I said, I got a ticket in my pocket for this guy for $16,000 right now, and he drove 2 hours on New Year's Day to go run a horse where the winner's share of the purse would have been less than, like, $4,000. And to get to where it is now, I think the last time I looked, $7,500 non-winners of two lifetime claimers run for $19,000. That's just remarkable.
And you talk about the evolution of the game. You watch the way that the horsemen, I don't know what to use the word, manipulate, but the way they strategize, how they claim horses and how they run horses back, and the way that they're able to make money and make good money by doing that in a very intelligent and smart way.
Yeah, in the being in that booth for as long as you were, you probably have the best perspective of anyone in the game, because again, it went from being, you know, really, I mean, as light purse money as you're going to get, to you probably have programs there that friends had sent you, like you said, where the full card is three races now in purse money.
Yeah.
Maybe on some days, like Cotillion and Pennsylvania Derby Day, I'm sure there are cards in there where there's one race is worth the entirety of a card from 28, 30 years ago.
No question about it. Absolutely no question about it. The way you use the word perspective, I wanted to put just a little bit of a different spin on that in terms of my perspective of where my booth was. I was lucky. You know, I've called it at different tracks. Monmouth, I did get a chance to call a race up at Belmont when they had pre-Breeders' Cup. They had something called
95. I remember that day, the day before the Breeders' Cup in 95. I was there that day.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to have one of the best situations for seeing the race that of any of the places I was at. I was almost directly, not quite, but almost directly on the finish line. I know that the booth at Monmouth Park, you're actually to the left of the finish line and by a little bit. So when you're trying to call a tight finish at Monmouth Park, it's very difficult because you have a terrible angle for the finish line. At Belmont, I couldn't. The first thing that happened was it's so big, my 10x50 binoculars weren't strong enough. I had to borrow somebody else's binoculars to call my one race. And then I was astounded at how steep the horses were, almost directly below me as they came down to the finish line. And that I found that to be a little bit, a very unusual feeling from what I was used to. But I had a great perspective in terms of being able to call the races on a day-to-day basis at Parks.
Yeah, you had a great booth. And, you know, of course, I would imagine you get asked most about Smarty Jones and how things started for him, with the local, you mentioned guys and gals that had stayed the whole time. I mean, John Service is as much a part of Philly Park and Parks as you are, quite frankly. But there were plenty of other good horses there, and we'll talk about Smarty in a minute, but plenty of other good horses that rolled through there, even at the beginning of your career.
No question about it. Going back to Smarty, though, Anthony, it was neat to see when you look back at the videos of the races. Here's a horse that ended up, I say he almost won the Triple Crown, and almost is almost. But the first two races, especially the first race, you look at the winner's circle, and there's almost nobody around the, nobody around the outside of that circle. Here's a horse that went on to serious national prominence in the first race of his career, and almost nobody's there to, in the winner's circle to greet him. They had no idea what he was or who he was at that point.
At what point did you kind of know that, you know what, maybe this, I mean, that Pennsylvania Nursery was a sparkling performance, but, you get to see him on almost a weekly basis. When does it start going through your head, I might be calling a real racehorse here, a real contender?
I can point, there were two things, Anthony. The nursery And I know you know as an announcer exactly what I'm talking about. The way that a horse moves when he's running, when you're looking at a really good horse, you can tell. And the way he went down the 7 furlongs for us is a straight run to the far turn. So the first half mile is basically a straight run, and he was on the front end, and didn't even seem like he was exerting himself. It was effortless for him. And I look up at the teletimer, and he went 44-1. And I was just astounded. There was no way it seemed like he could possibly be going that fast. And yet he hits it at 44-1. And, you know, here a two-year-old in the second race of his career, okay, he's gone way too fast. He's going to back up into the field. And instead he just continued to widen and draw away. So that was number one. The second thing that I'll never forget is we were down in the winner's circle early in the morning for one of his workout sessions. And, you know, you're down on the track, and I know you, again, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The horses that'll come by, you can hear that boom, boom, boom as they're going by. Well, he ran by in his workout, and it was almost like there was no sound. It was as if he was just gliding over the track. And that, again, just astounded me. The sound, there was almost no sound.
Yeah, those are the great. They're not even the good ones. Those are the great ones. You just kind of know. I tell you what, we had a nice little shipper come up and win the Jerome yesterday. That Capo Kane, he ran really, really well yesterday. An 84 buyer speed figure. He did everything on the front end. He ran really, really well. I'm not saying he's Smarty Jones, but he ran really well yesterday. We're talking with track announcer Keith Jones, spent 34 years down at Parks. Was he your favorite horse to call, Smarty? Or did you have any other fanfare? I mean, I'm sure there are horses. I'm sure there are horses you called 50 or 60 times in your career.
That's another thing that's funny that you asked me that, because as the last couple of days were counting down, Anthony, I wondered to myself, what horse have I announced more than any other horse in my career? And really, honestly, I have no idea. But there's got to be somebody who I announced more than anybody. When you talk about fun horses, I think more than anything, the horses that come from off the pace and make those huge late runs, it's just so dramatic as they, you know, run down everybody in the stretch. And I remember one of my favorite late runners that just had a funny name. His name was Whistle Pig, a Pennsylvania bred that is owned by a friend of mine. I mean, you get horses that have cool names like that, and again, give you that exciting late run. That kind of stuff's a lot of fun.
How about some of the friends you've made over the years? Some of the, you know, not just the equine, and you know, you're a racetrack guy. You're not just an announcer. You're a racetrack guy. You're out in the morning, you know, telling stories about watching the workouts and stuff. Remember the first friend you made when you walked into Parks 34 years ago?
The first job I had was Garden State in 85. And this is kind of weird. She became an Eclipse Award winning photographer. Her name was Kim Pratt. And she was sitting in the publicity office waiting for an interview. You know, we met each other, and later she got a job the same day that I did. We came to find out we shared the same birthday, and we basically spent her office upstairs where I am in Parks is right next to mine. And just kind of amazing that the two of us shared all of that stuff throughout the course of the entirety of my career.
That's fantastic. Those are the little tidbits you only get here on the Equine Forum. That's fantastic. It's great to hear things like that. What will you miss the most?
I think I'm going to miss the people more than anything. Again, you mentioned the friendships. It's the relationships and the friendships that I've had a chance to garner over all the course of that time. But looking forward to it. I mean, where we're going, I'm sure I'm going to make a lot of new friends and do a lot of other kind of fun stuff. You know, I'm big with golf. I can't wait to get out to the golf course and start playing a little bit more golf than I've been able to over the past few years. But it's the people, Tony. The racetrack people are kind of a little breed into itself. And I've had a chance to work and meet and be friends with a lot of really, really nice people. And they've been so good to me over the course of all of that time. I'm going to miss them.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to miss you, too. And I could speak for fellow horsemen and women, racetrack announcers, and more importantly, guys in OTB betting their $2 and their $4, desperately waiting for the hello. Personally, thank you for letting me in there 30 years ago to watch you call one. And we look forward to talking to you down the line. Never say never, right? You said if some part-time stuff comes open, you're certainly willing to think about it.
Absolutely. I don't want to I absolutely would like to keep myself busy, especially mentally like that. I know I'll be able to get out and keep myself busy physically, but I want to keep myself busy mentally too.
All right. Well, hopefully something comes along. If not, hit them straight. And enjoy retirement, my friend. You deserve it.
I appreciate you having me on, and thanks for everything, Anthony.